You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this.
Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm chatting with Jillian Scott, and we talk about eating habits. Specifically, Jillian shares with us her story of binge eating and emotional eating, how she worked through it. She shares things that worked for her. She shares things that didn't work for her. She shares things that came up along the way, all kinds of things, all kinds of things. It's a great conversation. One thing that I think is super fun about this interview that you would never know if I didn't tell you, but I am going to tell you, so now you will know, is that this is the interview that was so nice that I had to do it twice. We actually had this conversation, or a version of this conversation, earlier, and I had bad weather on my end and I lost power in the middle of it, and the interview didn't save. So that was a bummer. And Jillian was kind enough to reschedule so that we could do it again. And I'm very thankful for that, Jillian. Thank you. Thank you. Because now we can share this story. So are you ready? I think so. Let's get started. Jillian Scott, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. This is actually welcome back because this is the second time we've recorded this interview because we had weather the first time. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Yes. Thank you so much, Amy. I'm so excited to be here.
Again. Yay.
Again. All right.
Very good. I begin all of my interviews asking people where they are. Tell us where you are.
I'm in Alabama. So down south.
How far south are you in Alabama? Because the top of Florida is basically Alabama.
Right. So I'm in the northern part. I am like 20 minutes from the border of Tennessee. I'm up in the northern part of the state. Yeah.
The opposite. I did a road trip 2 weeks ago now, and I was not all the way to the panhandle, but close. But you know, panhandle, like that part of Florida is basically Alabama.
Right.
And it's one of those geographic things like, why? Why is this part still Florida? Like, why is it not?
Right?
So yeah.
Exactly. Florida did some janky stuff with the map there.
100%. 100%. It's not the only state that has that. There's some others that do the same sort of
yeah.
thing. But all right.
Yeah.
In a second, we're going to get to the topic of the day. But before we do that, let me ask you. So we say that laughter is the best medicine. What is something in your life that you can count on to bring a smile to your face or a laughter?
Yes. My son is 4 and a half, and he is guaranteed to bring laughter and joy every single day. And now that it's warm and it's summer, we're down at the pool frequently, and there are some really fun and funny times at the pool.
I have to say, there's four kids that have gone through my house. They got 4, 5, 6-year-old boy and also girl, but that is a fun age. They are charming, and they, you know, they're all over the place, and they do silly things. They do silly things. It's a lot of laughter. They're a lot of work, a lot of energy, lot of energy. All right. Very good. All right. So the topic of the day, we're going to talk about how you changed your eating habits. That's really what we're talking about. You say that for 14 years, you were a binge eater and you changed that. So the first question I'm going to ask you is about defining binge eating. And I'm not asking for like an official definition or anything like that, but just in your opinion and your personal experience, so that we're on the same page, what we're talking about, what does binge eating mean to you?
Yeah, so I kind of have a very loose definition, and it's a large quantity of food eaten in a short amount of time and often in secret with a lot of shame. And so that's often kind of the caveat that I put with it. And so some clients, I kind of leave it for clients to determine. But I think what is also helpful for them is realizing when it is maybe, oh, I overate a few bites, or I had, you know, 6 donut holes and I really would have been satisfied with 3. I wouldn't consider that a binge. When I was binging, I was eating, you know, popcorn, pretzels, ice cream, chocolate, 1 or 2 protein bars, you know, all kind of alternating between sweet and salty. It's a large amount of food in a short amount of time. And so that was in an hour, max 2. So I'm kind of like grazing, but just kind of this constant eating. And that is typically how I define it. And then bringing into aspect the emotional side of things of like, often we don't want people to see it. We are doing it to avoid emotions, to especially negative ones or negative self-talk. And there's a lot of shame afterwards.
All right. I love that. I love the definition. That's what I'm saying there. I love it. So let's talk about what was your personal motivation to change this in your own life? Like, what was it about this that gave you the reason to change? Because that's a choice, right? You could have just been like, this is who I am. I love that about me, moving on.
So I got to the point where we had I was married at the time, and my ex, we had just moved up to DC. He got out of the military, and I was working a job, and I just found I was constantly overeating. I was overeating at lunch, overeating throughout the day, kind of binging at night then. So it was just a lot of food. And I noticed, I was like, I'm spending a lot of money on all of this food. I don't feel good in my body. I feel like I have to exercise it off the next day and try to make up for it in some way. And I just felt like this isn't a normal, healthy eating habit. It was one of those things where I'm like, okay, this just doesn't feel normal, and this doesn't feel normal for me. And it was just kind of realizing, like, I haven't been this way my entire life. Something happened, something changed. And in those 14 years, there were times of heavier binging and less binging, but just noticing this pattern of this has been a long time in kind of in the making and building up. But it was really wanting to feel in control around food, wanting to feel like I wasn't just giving in to cravings and urges, no longer emotionally eating, and really being able to like be satisfied with my food and to be able to stop. It like seemed like a common, normal type of thing to be able to do. And I felt like I didn't have the willpower or the self-control. And a lot of it was just a lot of shame and frustration then that I had with myself. And so that was one of the habits where I'm like, you know, I don't like the results that this is creating. I don't like how I'm showing up for myself in my life. I want to change this.
All right, that sounds like a clear motivation. All right, so you shared with me that this took you a couple of years to make this change, this habit change, and that you did actually try some things that didn't work for you, right? Because it's a personal process. Do you want to share with us some of the things that you tried that didn't work for you? Not as guidance for what is good and bad or anything, but just as a frame of reference for some of the things.
So I had like I purchased a course, and I went through this course, and I was like, okay, well, she told me to feel my feelings, but I am feeling my feelings. And it was kind of like, well, okay, so I spent $500 for you to basically tell me to feel my feelings that you say all the time. But it wasn't really, I was like, this isn't really helpful. This, and I'm like, I was kind of frustrated and angry at that point. And I was like, okay, now I'm angry at you. And I am feeling my feelings. And also recognizing at the time, I still was probably covering up and not wanting to admit certain things to myself. So not wanting to admit how I really felt, because I was so used to just stay positive, look on the bright side, see the silver lining, which it was kind of this like toxic positivity. Like in a lot of ways, those can be really beneficial traits to have. And then sometimes when we don't actually allow ourselves to feel frustrated, shame, to see things that are actually a problem in life, it's not actually helpful. So, you know, trying a course that didn't feel supportive because I didn't have anybody to talk to and like to be able to work through things with. So then I tried a like kind of like a membership. And then I got on a coaching call, and I, you know, raised my hand, and I was like, you know, I was, you know, feel like I do really good, but then I was overeating at lunch, and then I ate this protein bar, and it's not like it was a bad food or, you know, that we need to moralize food, but I'm still overeating. You know, can you help? And he basically said this was like a guest. It was like somebody that he had hired, that the main coach had hired, so he wasn't actually in the call. The main person who I was thought I was going to get. And so this other person came in, and he was like, well, you should just, you know, feel good about yourself because it was a protein bar and not like a Snickers bar. And I was like, but I'm still overeating. You're not helping me solve the problem. Like, this is why I joined the program. This is what I thought you were going to help me with, and you're not helping me solve the problem. And so one of the things that I'm proud of was to be able to recognize, like, okay, I'm not getting what I'm looking for or what I need. And to not stress and be like, well, I should just keep going. I need to try to get my money's worth out of it. I need to tr like I just decided, okay, that didn't work. Let me go on to the next thing. Like, let me find somebody else. So then I didn't end up working with this coach, but I did a consultation with her, and she, really sweet woman, but she was very much like, you know, eat whatever you want, let your body do whatever it's going to be, let it gain weight if it needs to gain weight. And I was like, that's a no. That is terrifying to me. And so for where I was mentally and emotionally, that just didn't feel right. And so I was like, I like what you're saying about like no food is bad, and but like I also still want to lose weight. And so, but I kind of felt this subtle shame of like, well, why do you want to lose weight? Like, kind of like
Right.
something's wrong with you if you want to. And so it was something where it just wasn't quite in alignment. I listened to podcasts and YouTube videos. I'm trying to think of what else, like what other like programs and things that I did.
But
But
I think that gives a taste
yeah.
because what I had no idea what you were going to say, even though we
Yeah.
had part of this conversation before. But what I was hoping for and what I was guessing is, and it worked out, is that it is a very personal journey. Even, it's going to be slightly different for different people. And that's not just about food. It's about a bazillion things. Shopping for shoes. People do things in
Yeah.
a different way. People like to do things in a different way. And so there's latitude for, different types of things. And that's what I was searching for in that question, and it worked out that
Perfect.
way. So that's very cool. So we are going to talk about how you actually did work through that for yourself in just a minute. But I want to switch gears a little bit and rewind the clock again. You mentioned, I think, earlier that this is not something that you feel like you went through for your entire life. But do you remember how old you were, or you might have been, the first time that you became aware that you were binge eating?
Yes, so I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, I would say I was 18. I was a senior in high school, and I remember it was over the winter months. I was playing soccer, and I had gone out for a run after the soccer practice because in my mind I needed to like exercise a certain amount. I was very obsessed with exercising, and so I went out and ran, and then I got back and my sister had some friends over, and I remember I wasn't super hungry, but I wanted something sweet. And
Okay.
I should have had a meal. Like, I needed to just eat some real food. And instead, I grabbed this, half gallon of ice cream out of the freezer and started eating it. I mean, it was probably like, low fat vanilla or whatever. And so I'm eating it, eating it, eating it, not really noticing or paying attention, but just kind of having the conversation. And then I hit the bottom of the carton with my spoon. And I was like, oh my gosh, what have I just done? I've now ruined the run. I'm gonna have to run extra tomorrow. It was just all of this shame of like, what have I done? But I didn't have the capacity, awareness, or anything to be able to like hold some compassion for myself, to get curious, to really understand and answer that question in a healthy way of like, oh, why was I reaching for this? And
Okay.
instead, I just used it against myself. So that was probably the start of when I would say this binge eating habit really began. And it
Okay.
was fairly got fairly heavy, so halfway through senior year of high school and then into college. And sometimes it was overeating at breakfast. It was I need to eat low carb but still run cross country. And so I would try to eat low carb in the dining hall and then eat three, well, it's usually like four chewy
Yeah.
Chips Ahoy, granola bars when I got back to my room. Or it was not it just wasn't a balanced meal, and it wasn't fueling my body. And part of it was just this fear of carbs.
Sure. No, absolutely. My dad was a big ice cream eater, and he used to the little pints of Ben and Jerry's. So your story is about a half gallon, which is a large multiple servings of ice cream. But so he
Yeah.
used to joke because he would the little pints of ice cream and he would buy them. And I think I haven't looked at it in a long time, but there's like I think supposed to be four servings in there. And he used to
Right.
always look at me, he's like, who are they kidding? This is a
Right.
single serve. This is a
Right.
single serving size of ice cream. This is one seating of ice cream. I always remember that. I was like, well, man, I don't know, man, maybe.
Yeah. So they actually have changed that. Most pints will do it based on half of the pint and then the whole
Okay.
thing. So yeah, they have changed the serving size, but you're right. Like, it used to be four. It was intended at one point to be four. Yes.
And that's like two like little teaspoons of ice cream. Anyway, dividing that in four would be a very small portion of ice cream, which is not to say, I mean, it's just their portion size on the nutrition label is really kind of just a way so you can know how much you're getting in that amount
Right.
and more than the percentages that they're putting, which are like daily value of nutrients or whatever. So, but
Right,
it you can
right.
it, you can poke fun at it if you totally want. Okay, so I want to take a second and dig a little bit more on when you were younger and like origin story around food and stuff like that. Do you remember, and you may not, this might be a bad question, how old you were when you sort of remember learning or figuring out how that food could be connected to body size, and even when you became aware of the concept of restrictive eating or what we would call dieting?
Yeah, so I was probably 7 or 8 when I first kind of came to this conclusion that I was fat or I was overweight because my cousin got praised for being tall and thin, and I didn't. And my aunt, who didn't mean anything negative by it, but I remember we were trying on her clothes and playing dress up with her clothes, and I'm wearing some of her shorts, and she goes, "Oh, be careful, Jilly. Don't stretch those out. I just washed them." And in my mind, I'm like, "We're the same age. We're the same size, aren't we? Like, sure, she's a little bit taller than me, but we're like basically the same size." And I think it's like it was little, there were some little things along the way that really created a lot more body dysmorphia to where later in life, then I could be, maybe 10 or 20 pounds overweight, but it felt like I had 120 pounds on me. Like it was just so distorted. And so it was, I would say from that young age, I didn't diet, but the awareness of my body came in. And I think there was some kind of knowledge and awareness of like what I was eating, how much, a little bit just rubbing off from mom and grandma, on diets, or my grandmother had these little magnets on the refrigerator about food. And one of them was a moment on the lips, forever on the hips. And my sister
That's a
even remembers it,
That's
right?
a super famous
Yeah.
line from them. And that's the next thing I was going to ask you was what you remembered about the adults in
Yeah.
your life when you were younger and their relationship to their body size and food. And this is not to cast judgment on the people in our lives and our families, but we do learn about eating and food
Right.
from the house that we grow up in. And that's because
Right.
that's what we know. That's what we
Right,
know.
exactly. And I think this is what I always like to highlight is nobody ever told me that I was fat or overweight. It's what I made it mean. It's what I made their comments, their words, the things mean. And so even when I was 12, we'd moved across the country when I was 10 out of California, went back to visit 2 years later. And between 10 and 12, a lot of kids change quite a bit. But when I see it every day, I don't notice the change. So in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm still basically the same kid that left. But when I go back to visit my grandmother, like when I first arrive, she will not stop swooning about how tall and thin I am. But rather than being proud and being like, oh, I made it, my thought was, oh, that must mean I must have been fat before because I didn't get this praise before. I must have been overweight. That was bad. We can't do that again. So there was this kind of subtle undercurrent that really sat for a long time. And I didn't actually pursue a diet until I was probably 17 going on 18. It was much later in high school. I had some thoughts about like eating healthy and just trying not to eat too much. Yeah, probably some like junior, senior year of high school is when like restricting my eating, trying to change what and how much. That's where that came in.
Yeah, there's some really sort of alarming survey data that comes out sometimes when they talk about young girls and food. And I don't know if it's still accurate or if it's been updated, and I'm probably going to get the data wrong, but there's a pretty high percentage of young girls, like 8 or 9, who have
Yeah.
already begun to restrict food. And then there is the thing when you go through puberty and your body changes, that's a tough time
Yeah.
for girls and boys. It's also when we grow sometimes.
Yeah.
And I remember I thought I had grown height, like all this height over the summer. I was so excited to go back to school and be like taller than all the other people. But they had also all grown over the summer. It was super
Wow.
anticlimactic for me. I went back and I was like, I'm
Yeah.
still at the end of the line. I can't believe it. All right. So we are going to talk more about your journey, but I want to talk directly to the people who are listening and watching and invite you into the conversation. So on the social media accounts for the show, Instagram and YouTube, I post discussion questions. Join in, share your answers, engage with me, engage with Jillian, all of those things. Join the conversation. If you're not already following the show on social media, the links will be in the show notes. Easy peasy, just for fun. And now back to the topic. So I asked you a bunch of questions about your early relationship with food and diet culture. Now let's talk about how you actually work through it for yourself. So you tried some programs that didn't work because they were not a good fit. I think you mentioned that one of them was about feeling your feelings. I'm interested to see how that comes up again because it sounds like that one didn't work. But so you share because you shared that you had been binge eating and emotional eating. So I'm just curious how this all ties together. They had become ingrained habits. So what is it that you did that eventually did work for you? How did you modify this in a way that changed for you?
And this is so great because it's like there were really good intentions, I think, by this coach, and I think she helped a lot of people. But for me, that course and just this concept of like feel your feelings, it wasn't helpful. I needed somebody because I was at the point where I didn't even know that I had certain feelings. I didn't know what they felt like. I didn't know what they were. I didn't ex know how to like describe them. And so I needed somebody to actually like walk me through a process of, okay, let's look at a circumstance. Let's look at how you're feeling in this moment. Let's look at your thoughts about what's happening. Let's look at your thoughts about yourself. And now, if you really sit with this, and I needed somebody to just break it down for me, like step by step, not just this kind of vague, generic feel your feelings, even though that is part of the answer, that is part of the solution, is giving yourself permission to feel what's coming up. And part of it is having a process where you know you could go through and actually identify and understand, here is what I'm thinking, or here's is what I'm feeling, and then being able to even go deeper than that. So anger is a great example of that, of like we have anger as kind of this surface layer emotion. There are so many sub anger emotions that come up, and the more clear we are on what's happening, the better, the more we can start to identify, okay, this is what's coming up for me. And what I noticed was it wasn't always just what was happening in the moment. It wasn't just my day was stressful, my week was stressful. It was like deep shame around, I'm not good enough. I should be doing more with my life. What am I doing? I should be making more money. I should be able to buy a house by now. And it was also included my ex. My husband shouldn't be talking to me like this. I should, like, it was just a lot of shoulds. And a lot of unmet expectations, a lot of how I thought life was going to be and life was going to turn out and how different it was. And then even kind of when he would say or do something that triggered that shame, that's where a lot of it was really this undercurrent of low self-esteem, low confidence. It really didn't have as much to do with my day. There were little bits of that came up. Part of why I think I was emotionally eating was because I didn't love my job and I didn't feel like I was using my skills and like, you know, kind of leaning into gifts and strengths. And so like that was one aspect, but just changing jobs, still feeling myself binging, just going into my business full time, still emotionally eating, not binging anymore, but still emotionally eating. And so still noticing like food still is where my brain goes for comfort, relaxation, the sense of relief, a distraction. I could procrastinate a snack, you know. So it's, yeah.
No, and you've got kids, so you've seen this. Food is a source of soothing for young children. So the fact that it always makes sense to me why we do that. Okay, so when you were talking about the feel your feelings, I was reminded of there's a TV show that's it's several years old now, but Schitt's Creek is the name of it. And there's a scene where the mom is saying to the son, she's like, "Fold in the cheese," and he's like, "What does that mean?" And she just says it again, "Fold in the cheese," and he's like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "What am I supposed to do?" And she's like, and she just keeps repeating what she's saying because. And the joke is, it's super funny because it's clear that she has no idea what it means either. And so that's why she just keeps reading it. And that's why the scene is funny. But the reason I think it reminds me of that is that when somebody tells us to do something, but we don't understand what it means, it's not always helpful. And that's no judgment on the coach or on anybody who's in that situation. It's just a mismatch of things going on. I remember being in a yoga class or a workout class, like after I'd had one of the kids, and they were like, "Engage your core." And I was like, "Wait, what happened to my core? Like, where is it? Like, where's the engage button? I've forgotten." You know, it was like everything was gone. So.
Or even like trying to squeeze certain muscles. So I teach body pump, and I remember taking the class early on, and they would say, like, when you're squatting, you want to like squeeze your glutes and like squeeze as you stand, right? And so I'm like, okay, I understand the concept, but I don't know how to physically do that in my
Yes,
body kind
that's
of thing, right?
exactly what
Like
it
it
is.
took some time to actually try to do that. And now it's interesting because as the instructor now, I can feel myself doing it as I'm working out, but I'm also trying to cue people and explain how do you do this? What does this look like?
And what
And
does it feel like? And within the coaching, the physical coaching space, some people are uncomfortable having somebody touch their body. And so sometimes it's not like that. But if you work with like a physical therapist or a trainer, sometimes they'll like sort of poke you to cue that session. They're like, this is the muscle. So it's like engage your deltoid and you're like, I don't know where is that? And they'll poke it and they're like, and by the way, this is not engaged, It's like, ow, all right, moving forward. All right. So now you say though that you become a ninja at feeling your feelings. And I love this. So now you say that you've become a ninja at feeling your feelings. And I'd love for you to share with us an example of what that means in a regular day. It doesn't have to be a big example, but just give us a sense of what that might mean.
So it's really like my language and vocabulary around emotions has increased a lot, and it's just part of it is tuning into my body. Part of it is noticing like what is physically happening, what are the sensations that I'm feeling, as well as what am I thinking, what's happening in, what's the context that I'm feeling this, and just being more aware and noticing like, oh, if I'm feeling stressed, that is often coming from a thought, especially if it's around my son or he's not getting ready for school on time. He doesn't want to put on his shoes. He doesn't want to get into the car, right? Number one, his brain's wired for fun, right? So I have to always account for that. And two, like I feel stressed because my thought is he's not listening to me and that's a problem. Or he should be putting on his shoes right now. I've already asked him. He knows what to do. Now he's being, right? It's like this whole story about what's happening. And I feel stressed because of my expectations, instead of, oh no, this is exactly what should be happening. Like he's little, he's just wants to have fun. He just wants to play this, like putting his shoes on his hands and like, singing silly songs. Like that's really fun for him. He doesn't have the same concept of time, or he doesn't know my schedule, all of these things. And
He
it helps to
doesn't
bring
care
in,
about being late yet at all. No, I remember the overwhelm, like, so when they're little and I'm taking them to school and we had different age groups and stuff like that. So even when the older ones were able to understand about being in school, there were young ones who did not. And so, and then I would have to go in and sign them in and why were you late? And it's like, I do not have children in your house. We were late because we were late. The answer is we were late. We're just late because this is the way it goes. Three out of four people are in the car and one has to go to the bathroom. We're late. We're just late.
Or
How
you
much
wait till
detail do you want?
you get down to the car, everyone's buckled, and then someone has to poop, and you're like,
Every single
okay,
time. And
like
that's a very big, that stop is not quick. It's like change your clothes to, get a snack, sing a song. It's not a fast process. And four-year-olds don't do anything quickly. You can be late. Why were you late to school? Because we're working on tying our shoes and they wanted to do it themselves. How much do you want to know?
And so part of this is really just noticing. It's like allowing myself to feel typically negative emotions. It's like allowing myself to feel disappointed, to feel anger. That was another one. And this often comes up d depending on your childhood. A lot of the clients that I work with have traumatic childhoods. They've been through a lot of relationship dysfunction. And so that often plays a role in this as well, as we learn that negative emotions or certain emotions are not allowed in with this person, so with a parent typically. So we need to feel better. So it becomes really easy to turn to food to try to feel better. And we just learn to stuff them down. And so it's almost like it doesn't matter what this emotion is or how it feels because it's not validated, it's not allowed. It's the, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. There's like, being raised by an emotionally immature person while they are an adult in size and figure, they are really a toddler on the inside. And, when toddlers are trying to then raise young kids, doesn't really work very well. And so a lot of this is really just it's understanding how my brain was working at the time, understanding and that it's okay to feel these negative emotions and that nothing has gone wrong. And, even just my expectations of how much should I be happy? Like, I should be happy 90% of the time. I'll give a little room for sadness, but not a lot,
I blame Disney for that one because of the whole, which is not really fair, but that's the famous thing. It's all happily ever after. It's like you're supposed to be happy all the time. It's not really Disney, but there's also like the context of TV shows where people solve problems in very short time frames. So like if you grew up watching, shows with the sitcom, and it's like a really big thing happens in this episode of, and we'll pick a show that's really old, so it's ridiculous, like the Brady Bunch, but they fix it in 22 minutes. And that's not usually the way life works out. And but you, even if you know it's ridiculous, you can be holding yourself, you can internalize it and hold yourself accountable. Like if I was better, if I was better at this. And the thing that I say, like in the Gospel According to Amy, which is a little bit of a joke, is that having parents and being raised by people who are older than you is not really good experience for them doing that yourself, is what it turns out to be. It's like we still have to figure it out ourselves when we get there. And that's so surprising. Being a child did not prepare me to raise a child. Like it was completely unexpected how I was going to react. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do this. How surprising that I don't remember what you did when I was three. I have no memories. And that's not true for everybody. Some people have a lot of experience with siblings and cousins and stuff like that. So they have a lot more experience than people than I do. But for me, I was like, oh, I don't know. All right. So no conversation in 2025 about body size, about food, about any of those things would be complete without at least taking a second to talk about the new, very, very popular medications that are available for people these days. Not judgment or like any or advice or anything like that, but what thoughts do you have, if any, about the new medications that people have access to?
So my thought and my opinion is like, what can you do for the rest of your life without hating your life? And I think sometimes the medications can be beneficial if somebody really needs to kind of be able to build some momentum around losing weight for health reasons, to be able to feel better in their bodies, like get health conditions under control, and they need it just kind of in the beginning because they're at a like there's a lot of low self-confidence, self-trust, and they're looking for something that's going to help. But what happens is I think people rely too much on a medication and they aren't at the same time working on their relationship with food. Have I had enough? Am I really satisfied? Learning what food rules are really holding them back and creating more of this binging habit. And really addressing the emotional eating side of things, because just like with weight loss surgery, you might lose some weight and maybe you lose a lot, maybe you lose 60 to 80 pounds, but do you just gain it back again? Do you have to have more surgery? Do you have to go back on it? And I think some people's bodies just don't respond well, like they have really bad side effects, because depending on the
Yeah,
brand and
some
what
people
you're
get really,
taking.
really sick. Some people get a lot of nausea and stuff like that. And
And
there's a
there
small percentage of people. So now there's millions and millions of people are taking it. And so there's a lot more data than there was. And there's a small percentage of people who it looks like it just doesn't work at all. And I don't know if anybody knows why. I would not be the person who knows why. And then, I mean, the results that people get is really impressive, and wonderful for them. And then there is the reality that for some people to maintain it, if you want to stick with the medicine, you are talking about taking the medicine forever, which for some people, fine, like taking medicine forever, like if you're diabetic and you're taking medicine for diabetes, you got to take that forever because that's your life. If you have a heart disease, so I have no judgment about taking a medicine myself. I have no judgment about taking a medicine, but it is something to think about. Like if somebody told you you had to eat cabbage soup every day for the rest of your life, do you want to do that? Like, is that what you want to do? Are you going to be able to?
So I think sometimes it's just a band-aid on a bullet wound. It gives them the quick hit of dopamine of like, oh yeah, I can lose the weight. But the challenge and the flip side of that is all of the shame and self-loathing that comes if you regain it. So not that everybody will, but it kind of keeps you stuck and trapped in this cycle. And then if you are trying to willpower your way through medication and through these really negative side effects, like I
Yeah,
know some
some people
people that
really get
now,
sick.
they're like, they feel terrible. They don't want to eat well. They don't go to the gym. They're not sleeping great, but they're still taking it because it's like they're desperate to lose weight and it feels like nothing else is working or this is the thing that is supposed to work. And so, my recommendation is always like, you've got to listen to your body. And part of it is trusting it. And a big piece is like deprogramming and debrainwashing from a lot of what we're taught in the diet industry.
Fair enough, fair enough. One of the things that comes up with the medications is that apparently some people, I don't know how many people, I don't have any actual data, but it shuts off what they're calling food noise, which, and I think is like, I think that means they're constantly thinking about the next meal and food. So not speaking about the medicines necessarily now, but speaking generally about food noise, do you think you're a person who does experience food noise? Like, is this something that when you were binge eating and when you were working through the habit, was this something you think you might have experienced?
Oh, I did. Yes. Yeah. There was a constant obsession about food, what I could and couldn't eat. When was I eating next? What was my next meal? Where were we going to go out to eat? Because it better have good food because I'm going for the food because the food was like such a point of pleasure and joy. And so there was a lot of food noise. There was a lot of, I called it food mind drama. And so, and that is a real thing. And so if that can, if you can calm that with the medication, I think that's wonderful. But you also have to learn how to calm that without the medication, because at some point, like you
If you
said,
want to
like
go off,
you will likely will come off. And so that's, it is important to be able to understand why it's there, what it's saying, being able to talk back to it, right? So a lot of what I do is very much mindset work. While emotions is a large part of it, we have to be thinking and talking to ourselves differently and talking about food and thinking about food and diets and what food is good or bad or healthy and unhealthy. Or, you know, when we've been th thinking these things for decades, it's really hard just to flip a switch and turn it off. And so it does take a little bit of time. And that's why I tell people, like, give yourself 6 to 12 months, but I guarantee people can stop binge eating within 6 months. You can stop binge eating within a year. But we've got to be mindful and you've got to be intentional. And if you're solving the right problem, though, of like actually understanding what is at play here, you can do that.
So very, very interesting. I appreciate your honesty with that, with the food noise. It's definitely, it's an
Yeah.
interesting thing because I think it's a part of the conversation about the medications that it gave a voice to something that big parts of the medical community had been apparently downplaying. And I don't speak about this from experience because it's not something I've experienced, but it was like people came out and they're like, it changes this. And apparently these are things that they had been talking to doctors and therapists for a long time. And they're like, oh no. And then it was, and so it's a really big shift in the conversation about how people have been managing this. And I don't think there can be a downside to that. I don't know if you fast forward, I have absolutely no idea. You fast forward the time clock for 10 years, I don't know what we're going to be saying about these medications or weight loss, but I do think that it's definitely going to have an impact on how we do it. All right, but off that, because that can be a hot topic for people. People have strong opinions about the medications, which is not me, but other people.
Yeah, I don't either, really. You know, I again, I think if you feel like you need medication for anything, like in it's like explore it and see what does it, how do you feel in your body? And I remember there was one around, or like just kind of a conversation around like anti-anxiety, antidepressants, and it's like, it does it help you to feel more like yourself? Because that's what it's all about, right? And so, you know, but yeah, I'm
That's
with
where I
you.
weigh into, and I'm the same with because way before these medications were around, there were similar discussions and shame and judgment about people who took a surgical route for weight loss. And I knew people who had, I mean, that's a major operation, but I knew people who did it. I just don't have any judgment on it at all. It's like if you've thought about it and you're happy with your decision and it works for you, then fantastic, because it's you doing you. That's what, like, if I have thoughts about it, I'm going to apply it to me making that decision, which, and I'm going to let you make your decision. Unless, I can't think of an unless actually. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final fun questions, but I want you to give you a chance to actually directly talk to the people listening, tell them really what you do. You've mentioned that you work with clients, you've mentioned some things about coaching, and then you have an offer for the audience, which is a free training, which is called Hungry for Love. So, there's information about that in the show notes and in the email that goes out about the episode.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Thank you. So I'm a trauma certified life and weight loss coach. I do help clients on their weight loss journey, but it is really healing their relationship with food and body image. And a lot of that then becomes healing and understanding what are those food rules, what does keep me trapped in this binging habit, sometimes because of what we're restricting, what we think we are supposed to eat or not eat. I really help people with binge eating and emotional eating. And then the third piece is healing from trauma, especially relationship trauma, where it really reprograms our brain to seek safety over success. And so a lot of times we lack self-belief, self-confidence. We have really deep abandonment and shame wounds. And so it's really understanding and unpacking some of these deeper layers and deeper aspects that do have us holding back, that do have us somewhat afraid of success, or we can be really good for a few weeks and then we slam on the brakes. And really understanding why that's happening and getting to a place where you can break free from that. But we do have to look at the trauma, which is sometimes not where people want to go, or at least in the beginning, there can be some resistance to that. And that's normal, you know, and I didn't start there. I definitely in my own journey, that was the direction that it went, was really understanding. I actually probably started more with the emotional eating, binge eating, And part of that was healing my relationship with food, letting go of food rules, making peace, and like learning to truly love my body now. And if you are wanting to lose weight, it's love it now and down the scale. Stop trying to punish yourself with weight loss or punish yourself with exercise. And then recently, it has been more trauma awareness and healing and understanding how it plays into so many areas of our life. So that's been so much of my journey. And so that's why I love doing this with clients, is I have training and certifications in it, but I also have my real lived experience.
Very nice. Very nice. And our bodies change as we age. Like, so the work on accepting your body like never stops. As far as I know, I'm not to the never, ever, ever point, but as far as I know, it's applicable in so many things. All right, that is spectacular. Very, very good. Are you ready for the final questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, very, very good. If you were going to a social event, any event at all, would you rather be early, late, or right on time?
I would rather be a little bit, I would say probably I would rather be on time. I typically run like 5 to 10 minutes late.
Very, very good. All right. So this one, you know what? We were talking about food, and what I should have, I wrote these before I wrote the questions, but I wouldn't go this anyway. You're choosing where you think about this as preference in terms of your personality, not in terms of like nutrition or diet or anything like that. You're picking where you're going to go for a meal. Do you choose a place where you get to sit down, somebody comes and serves you choose your food from a menu, or do you like to go to like an all-you-can-eat buffet where you get to pick from a bunch of different things?
Oh, usually a sit-down restaurant where they come and serve me. I very rarely go to buffets. I feel like I don't quote get my money's worth out of them, right? You know, and so it's like I don't eat huge portions. I'm not trying to do that. And so it has been a long time since I've done that. I would much rather pay for a meal and then have leftovers the next day.
All right, very, very good. Very good. I know people who love buffets. I get decision anxiety. I'm like,
Right.
which am I going to regret it if I go with this one? You know, all right. So, but the one exception is like in the Midwest, there's this fantastic place called Pizza Ranch, which is like you can take like one little tiny slice of different types of pizza. I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed. Like my whole family like teases me. It's like they'll send me messages. They're like, there's a Pizza Ranch over here. And I'm like, I'm on the airplane. I'm not actually, but I am a big fan. I think it's a great restaurant. All right. So if you won today a $10,000 cash prize, but the rules are you have to spend it today, and you have to spend it on yourself, nobody else. What would you buy?
I'm thinking like a trip to like the Caribbean with like an all-inclusive resort and like a spa day, and like that's kind of that's
That's what
what I
comes to
would spend it
mind.
on.
All right. That sounds super fun. All right. That's it. Jillian Scott, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy. I loved it.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone. Signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.